Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Greetings, Cats fans. This is James Strebel from A Sea of Blue, here with the Week 2 Kentucky Football Podcast. Joining me on the podcast today is Glenn Hallett. Glenn Logan and Ken Hallett. First mess up today, but Glenn Logan and Ken Hallett. How are you guys doing this evening, and thanks for joining me.
Me and four rows of single barrel are just fine.
Oh, wow. That's what I'm talking about. I'm jealous.
I'm doing very well.
All right.
Painkillers and iced tea. How about that?
Yeah, Ken actually had a little bit of a minor surgery. Was that yesterday or Wednesday?
Yeah, I had some dental work done yesterday and some more next week. It's a three-week process I'm going through. So day one out of the way.
Oh my goodness! That's one thing I can't stand doing is going to the dentist. I know I have to do it, you know, dental hygiene and all, but I'd rather do almost anything, you know.
Yeah.
But,
And
maybe Glenn will let you borrow some of his Four Roses single barrel.
Yeah,
help ease the pain.
Absolutely.
That's some good stuff.
Painkiller.
That's right. I had a friend give us a bottle of that for being in his wedding, and. Man, oh man, what a gift that was! I could talk bourbon all night, but our subject this evening is the Kentucky Wildcats football team. Before we get into their matchup against Miami of Ohio, which is coming up this Saturday, let's take a brief look back at the loss in Nashville against Western Kentucky. I'll just say some quick thoughts real quick, and then you guys can expound as much as you'd like. Personally, I was disappointed, but in the back of my mind, I almost expected it. I drove home from my friend's house, and I was unable to enjoy one heck of a football game between Clemson and Georgia because I was just so disappointed, not so much angry, as I was just really sad at what happened. You know, we had such high expectations, and, we kind of got brought back down to earth a little bit. Just my view of the game is that I think that they played a little tight, and I think the coaches may have called it a little more conservative. I think they were playing not to lose early than just to win. I think the play calling was really, kind of bland, honestly. I think Jalen Whitlow in particular, this was not a loss to be his fault at all. It's a group effort. But I thought he played, it looked like he was nervous at the beginning. I mean, some of his passes were extremely errant and hit the Western Kentucky guys right in the numbers, and they just dropped them. Defensive line, I was very disappointed in. This much ballyhooed unit, failed to live up to expectations. And, overall, just a really subpar performance. And I chalk that up to not wanting to lose and just, like I said, playing not to lose instead of playing to win. That's my take on it. I'm interested to see what you guys have to say. So, Glenn, why don't you get the ball rolling and give me some, some thoughts on the loss to Western Kentucky.
Well, I've talked about this a lot on the blog, and I think mainly my disappointment was that the team seemed either unprepared or they – maybe not so much unprepared as just not quite focused on the things that they're supposed to be focused on. That was kind of disappointing. What I saw primarily was a defense that especially in the secondary, they had problems all over the field, but – the secondary had a big issue with giving the wide receiver just way too much room. You can't do that because what you do is you allow a quarterback to get into a rhythm throwing those little short throws. He gets a lot of confidence. He starts making connections, and the next thing you know, he's throwing the football down the field on you. That's number one. Number two, the defensive line, we already talked about that. I don't know what went wrong there. I'm going to assume that I don't think there was anything schematically wrong. The guys just weren't getting off blocks. And, you got to give Western credit because a lot of that is due to the way the offensive line did a really good job of staying in front of those big tackles. And the big tackles just couldn't get off the block. They couldn't get off of it. The defensive ends, they got pushed wide. They couldn't get off the block. We didn't do any stunts on defense. I didn't see any, you know, situation where the linebacker would run around and fly up the middle, or the rather the defensive end would run around the tackles and fly up the middle, you know, where they weren't and overload the interior. I didn't see any of that kind of thing going on. I think James, you got it exactly right. They call it a conservative game. It was conservative on offense. They tried to stick to the ground game because they thought they had a big advantage there. And it turned out that while they did have an advantage, they really didn't run it that well between the tackles. The offensive line simply didn't block that great between the tackles. Now, when it came to pass protection, they didn't do too bad. They weren't world beaters by any, you know, the quarterbacks got flushed several times, and you know, I think Mac Smith got sacked once, but they weren't awful either. It's not like they were living in the backfield. The guys had plenty of time to throw, and that was evidenced by the good numbers we had in the second half. So I think it was just a team effort. I think it was the coaches. I think it was the players. I think it was just everything. And I chalk it up now after, you know, thinking about it for a whole week. I'm basically going to chalk it up to just, look, first game, first head coaching, you know, first time at head coach for Stoops, just not quite ready for prime time.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here. Real quick before I get to Ken, just going back to the defensive line real quick, I want to ask you a question. Mr. Cobble and Dante Rumpf, you know, like you said, they had trouble getting off of blocks. There wasn't a lot of stunning by them. You know, there weren't any, like, any maneuvers or anything, any special called packages for them as far as stunts are concerned. One thing that I noticed is both those guys were gassed early, and they kept having cramps and leg problems and injuries, and kept going off the field and coming back on the field. Are those guys too big to play maybe a full game, you know, let alone an entire season? They both had injury-prone careers. You know, I know you want somebody big in there to clog up the middle, but are Rumpf and Cobble too big, or am I just kind of reading too much into that?
Yeah, I think it was really more the heat. I mean, it was a hot day down there, and you know, big guys, hot days. You know, that's going to be a problem every time. I mean, you even had quarterbacks cramping up, you know, down there. So I think really that was just the main thing was that it was just hot, and they got a little bit dehydrated. They've got to do a better job, and that's another thing that the coaches have to really do. They have to really pay close attention early in the season, hydration, because if you don't really pay close attention to that, you can get away from you.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I know that Eric Corum's, you know, program's been, you know, spoken about in such, you know, positive ways, but you know, it looked like the Kentucky players were, you know, much more affected by the heat and the dehydration and maybe the fatigue than Western. It seemed like our guys were going off the field more often than theirs. Ken, what are some of your thoughts on the game? Did we miss anything, or did you have anything extra you want to share, or just, you know, generally, what did you think?
Well, I don't think there were too many, even though I expected Kentucky to win the football game, there weren't really too many surprises to me, except with the exception of the D-line, which we've discussed, and was just playing against a team that I think most Kentucky fans – and analyzing in the game pregame, thought that was a clear advantage with their experience and the talent level on that D-line, the addition of Za'Darius Smith. So I was, you know, disappointed, obviously. I thought in the second half they did a marginally better job than they did in the first half in putting some pressure on Doughty, who played, you know, once again, a Kentucky defense makes probably a decent quarterback look like a Heisman Trophy candidate. Something we've seen, not in the last, historically something that's been a common occurrence in Kentucky football. But what really, I thought the outside linebackers were pathetic, not to pick on them too much, but I thought they were not good. I think the coaching staff even talked about that after the game. And I tell you one, you know, there were a couple of bright spots, though. I thought Blake McLean, true freshman out of Winter Park, Florida, came in and played about three or four different spots. Jennifer Smith, I believe it was, wrote a really outstanding article either today or the day before. Maybe it was yesterday, and I read it today, on McLean and the fact that the coaching staff has prepped him at about five different spots, safety, cornerback, outside linebacker. And I thought he played well. I thought that kid played really well, especially a freshman playing in his first game. I thought some of the younger guys, some of the freshmen who got some time, I thought we saw hope for the future. But overall, you know, to lose to Western Kentucky, it, to me, would not be that big a deal, Bobby, in Mark Stoops' first game, except for the fact that they're coached by a guy can I absolutely despise, and Bobby Petrino, and I hate losing that guy in anything. But, you know, hats off. He was meticulously prepared. His team played outstanding football. There's just no question about that. And, you know, I look for you know, WKU to definitely improve on last year's 7-6 season. And as far as Kentucky goes, you know, initially after the game, I'm thinking, God, this team may not win a game, you know. But I think the switch to Mike Smith at quarterback and, you know, not to bang on Stoops. I'm not questioning Stoops. I'm not, oh, my God, what's he doing? I love the guy. I think he's going to do a great job at Kentucky. But you have to wonder, as a fan, after watching the game, what in practice, and I know Mike Smith has a bad shoulder, but what in practice was going on to make that coaching staff think that Whitlow would be a more effective quarterback in that system than Smith? That's what I would love to ask that question if I had some one-on-one time with Coach Stoops. Not that Kentucky would have won the football game if Smith would have started. I'm not saying that. I'm just wondering what it is that they saw in practice that made them start Whitlow over Smith. Because Smith, to me, reminds me, you know, when I saw Andre Woodson as a sophomore when he split time with Aaron Boyd, you could just see something, the way he moved, his athleticism, his motion, his accuracy. Like, that guy is going to be a good quarterback. And that's what I've seen in Smith. You know, he shows me enough for me to think that that guy could be a pretty doggone SEC quarterback if given the opportunity and surrounded with some weapons. I still feel that way, and I think with him at the starting spot, that will improve that offense tremendously from scoring 26 points against Western, a team that probably should have scored at least 35 or 40. But I think they'll be much better going forward. They might not win many games, but they'll be much better offensively going forward, with Smith at quarterback and Whitlow using him in some other spot.
You brought up a ton of great points there. And, you know, I'll try to, you know, check them off here as I go. But first thing, you mentioned, you know, we'll talk about some of the positives that we took away from the game. And you actually hit on my positive, Ken, and that was the youth, you know, that we saw. You know, Ryan Timmons showed some great bursts.
Right.
You could see when he ran and when he was in the game that he is just a flat-out playmaker. He's a freshman. You know, he made, you know, a mistake, but that's okay. You know, he's going to be here, you know, three more years. And you can see why he was such an important piece to what Stoops and Brown want to do with this offense. Blake McLean, you know, again, true freshman playing in a secondary that's absolutely depleted and was the standout player for that secondary, in my opinion. You know, even more so than the veteran guys. JoJo Kemp, you know, he had a run that I thought, you know, I know Sam, not taking away from Sanders or George, both of them played very well, but I actually want to see a little more Kemp, because that one run he had, he was fast, he looked powerful, and, you know, my eyes kind of bulged out a little bit, thinking, whoa, look at that kid. And then, you know, Jason Hatcher got in near the end of the game too and you know, had some quality minutes. So that's my positive takeaway. I think the future is bright. The young guys that did get to get in and showcase their skills were quite impressive. What were some positives that you took away, just so we won't be, you know, all negative on our guys? What were some positives that you took away, Glenn? What did you see that you actually liked from this team?
I really love the special teams play. If you take away the kicking of Joe Mansour and those two boo-boos, he missed that critical extra point. And then how do you do that?
Yeah.
And then he muffed the onside kick, which those two things, maybe, I don't know, you can say were possibly nerves or possibly, I don't know, not paying attention to detail. I really don't know what it was. It could have been anything. By that time, they were kind of in shock. But I love the special teams. We covered every single kickoff was covered. I think they only attempted one or two returns, and neither one of those got past the 20. Then you had all the punts were covered great. I love that. And we had some good kickoff. I think DeMarco Robinson had a real nice punt.
33 yards.
And a couple of kickoff returns. We got past the 25. So I really loved overall how the special teams played. They played with a lot of passion. They did their job. And I thought that was a real big positive because if you'll remember back last year, our special teams play was absolutely pitiful. And I flattered unmercifully by saying that. And also, I agree with you guys, the young kids played well. I really liked what JoJo Kemp did. I'd like to have seen him get a couple more touches. I like what Timmons did. I wouldn't mind seeing him get a couple more touches. And he will because I think he's going to be starting next time.
Yeah, so, he's moved up the depth chart to the one receiver spot. Yeah,
H or whatever it is there. Yeah, he's going to be tough. He's quick, and he is just he's a really good little player, and he seems to know what to do when he gets in space. I mean, he doesn't try to do anything fancy. He just tries to he picks a line and he sticks to it, and he looks for another line and he sticks to it. I like that kind of running. It gets you a lot. You get a lot of downhill runs that way, and you can pick up yards fast, like he did on that one play where he broke away. So I liked a lot of things. Well, not a lot, but I liked several things, and I think you guys covered most of them pretty well. But I think the special teams really deserve praise if you just kind of forget about those little boo-boos by Joe Mansoor.
If I read right, I believe that UK is actually leading the SEC in kick returning average yards. That is.
You know, James, that's something also. Since Randall Cobb, I can't believe that the punter that's with Green Bay, good grief.
Tim Mastay.
Since Mastay and Cobb left, just overall, the special teams play at UK has not been good. Our punt return average 2 years ago was like 3.4 yards, literally 3.4 yards.
Bad.
Last year it was like 7.8, which is mediocre. But you know, the point I think the very cogent point that Glenn makes is, with his words, is that you know maybe Kentucky can steal some points, you know, with a punt return or a kickoff return for a touchdown, something we have not seen in a few years, and for a team that's going to struggle defensively, may be able to score some points, but it's going to struggle defensively and have to score a lot of points to win any games. Stealing some points on special teams could be big for this team going forward.
Well, they're definitely going to steal some field position if they play special teams well. Either way, either going to flip the field, or they're going to get a good return and get set up for a shorter drive. So
there you
go. Teams, you just can't say enough about that. They're really important.
Yes, they really are. And Robinson had a nice game. I mean, he ended up being the lead receiver. He did great with the kick and punt returns. You know, he's not a big guy, but he's very fast and he's very elusive. So hopefully we can see some continued improvement in his game. Something else that Ken brought up that I wanted to mention, Ken, you're really awesome at bringing up points. Earlier was obviously the Max Smith start this Saturday against Miami of Ohio. And he brought up an interesting point. You know, what exactly did the coaches see in Jalen Whitlow to, lead them to think that he was going to be the right guy for the job? Obviously, his legs take him to another level. The passing, he didn't have a bad game. I think he was 15 for 18.
10 of 15
for 78 yards. He averaged 5 yards a pass. And then, Max Smith came in, averaged 9 yards a pass, threw a touchdown. The offense looked better with him running it. He seems to be more of the air raid mold. I'm wondering if it is just the worry about the shoulder. Because, Jalen Whitlow could be a successful quarterback in the right system. If he was like a read option quarterback, he'd be better suited to something like that than, rather than the air raid, which, I wonder if now that Smith's the starter, we'll see Jalen Whitlow in packages like that when he plays a read option or something of that nature. I, for one, am glad to see Max Smith in the starting position. But the reports out of practice this week is that the team looks better offensively and that he's really, really blossomed in the leadership role. And, like, it's just kind of something that he's been waiting for and that he's been wanting to get back. Because we got to remember, you know, that's 2 years where his season's been shortened due to injury. And last year, he was looking good. He was looking really, really good. He's one of the few bright spots on that team. And so, you know, I just think to look for Neil Brown to open up the air raid even more because, you know, just talking to people and reading this, like, kind of everyone was like, well, that's the air raid was grounded against Western. So I think we'll see more of a traditional air raid with Max Smith.
James, you know, I think you and I think it was you. I was texting with about four different people during that game. And I think it was you and I who had a back and forth about see, now I lost my train of thought. It had to do with Max Smith. But let me just comment. I can't remember. I'm getting old, guys. Let me say this. I'm not meaning at all to degrade or belittle Jalen Whitlow. He's a tremendously gifted athlete. There's just no question about that. And he did some nice things with his, like, 50-yard run, 19-yard touchdown run. There's no question that he can hurt you with his legs. But in my opinion, in this offense, I think you're better served to have a guy who could take advantage of a DeMarco Robinson, who could take advantage of a Collins and a Timmons, and can throw the ball accurately farther than 15 or 20 yards down the field, and that's where I think Whitlow struggles. It's just a fact of life. Last year he was a 54% complete passer as a freshman. But I just think this offense would be much better suited with Smith, a quarterback who could deliver a moderately good to excellent deep ball and take advantage of some of the speed, because we have some talent. Even though we're short in numbers at the wideout spot, there's some talent there. You know, Timmons is just a savvy football player. I mean, he reminds me of, you see these studs that come in, and you can just see the way they move, the way they elude, the fact that they don't run east and west, they run north and south. Like a Randall Cobb, a Derek Abney, these guys that come in when they're young, and you're like, good grief, they just know the game. And Timmons is like that, I think. And I think Smith is the best guy to take that to take Kentucky further offensively, because you have to make a decision. Do you want a quarterback that can hurt you with the legs and not really hurt you with the passing game, or do you want a quarterback who can throw the ball down the field and run this offense? And I think, you know, clearly after the game against Western on Saturday, the answer has to be that you want a quarterback who can hit his receivers and take a little bit of the pressure off of what could potentially be an outstanding running game for the Cats this year.
Yeah, the running game was actually, not too bad. Glenn alluded to that, near the beginning of the podcast, you know, talking about they had a little trouble running between the tackles, but that's as good as I remember Raymond Sanders looking in the game. I mean, he looked really, really good, rushed for 98 yards. Glenn, what kind of positions, maybe not positions, but what kind of role do you see Jalen Whitlow playing if Max Smith remains the starter for, you know, here on out, barring, you know, injury or anything else? If Max Smith starts every other game the rest of the season, what kind of capacity do you see Whitlow in as far as his ability and what the coaches might want to do with him?
I think you have to move him to wide receiver. I mean, this is a no-brainer. He's 6'3", okay? He's the only big receiver we've got. We need a guy that size. Okay, he's not Blake Bone. Okay, he's not 6'5", but he's 6'3", every bit of it. He's got long arms. He's good foot speed. He can run a route. He can catch the football. He needs to go in there and play wide receiver. We need him at a receiver. We're light in receivers. Why is this hard? I mean, this is not rocket science. The kid, what is he going to play? If he ever makes it to the NFL, is he going to make it as a quarterback? Not likely. He is not Cam Newton, okay? He just isn't. And the bottom line is he needs to be in a receiver position, because you can do so many things with a guy like that. I mean, you can have him go in motion, flip him the ball, and he can throw a pass. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff you can do. I mean, it's like Randall Cobb, really. There's no difference between the two of them. except for one big thing. Whitlow's 6'3", about 200 pounds or so. I mean, he's a big target. He's the kind of guy you want catching the football. He's the kind of guy you want when he gets the football, you know, he knows what to do with it. So it's a no-brainer to me. I don't know why this is hard. I understand that they feel like they need, but they got quarterbacks coming out the yang. I mean, for heaven's sake, they really do. If you think about it, I mean, you've got a four-star sitting in third string, and you've got Whitlow, who's going to back up Max Smith. I mean, I don't get it. Move him to receiver. He knows the position. He doesn't have to be taught. I mean, quarterbacks probably know the receiver spot better than the receivers do.
Yeah.
No, put him at receiver. He's a big target. We need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He knows. Glenn makes a great point as far as I was talking with a football guy the other day. It was a couple of weeks ago, and you know he's talking about, well, just because the guy is a great athlete or fast or whatever doesn't mean he can catch the football. Well, we know that Whitlow can catch the football, and who knows the routes better than a quarterback? He knows exactly every play. He knows where the wide receiver is supposed to be on every play call. He's a quarterback. He knows all this stuff. And I agree with Glenn. You know, it's not that hard. It's not that hard. And to add him in his ability to elude and his speed, now you're talking about you got something with him, Timmons, and DeMarco Robinson and some of those other young guys. Now you have a receiving core that Max Smith can throw to with confidence.
Well, I know Mark Stoops is listening to us right now, so listen up, Mark.
As he should be.
We've got it figured out. Max Smith starting and Jalen Whitlow moved to wide receiver. No, I agree with you guys. He's a great player. He needs to be on the field. The worst thing that they could do is just sit him on the bench and not utilize his God-given athletic ability. He needs to be in the game in some facet, in some capacity, some way. And, you know, whether it be wide receiver or bring him in for, you know, some type of wildcat look or something, get the guy in the game. Obviously, it's not his throwing ability that he's there. He's an athlete, and he can make plays. So, yeah, I'm excited to see, you know, what this offense is going to look like on Saturday. And speaking of Saturday, we have the Miami Redhawks, Miami of Ohio Redhawks. They're coming to town, which is actually a big weekend for the University of Kentucky, and we'll get to that near the end of the podcast. But big home game, first home game of the season. I expect the crowd to still be packed in the Commonwealth and loud. I know a lot of UK fans were disappointed like, you know, we were. But I think that they're still behind Stoops, and we understand that this is a building process and it's going to take a while, and we're still going to support our team. So I expect it to be close to maybe sold-out crowd. And just real quick on Miami, before we move on to some other things, they're not a good football team. they were blown out by Marshall on Saturday, 52-14. And this is not the Marshall team with Chad Pennington and Byron Leftwich throwing the ball. You know, this is – and Randy Moss, you know, in the receiving core, okay? This is not that Marshall. But it was ugly. They – and look at some of these stats here real quick for get back to you guys. Their quarterback pass for 165 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Their leading rusher rushed for 27 yards. for the game. Marshall, let's see, Marshall last season, let's see how they did. They weren't terrible. They had their quarterback threw for 5 touchdowns against Miami of Ohio. He 253 yards and 5 touchdowns. Their running back rushed for 107 yards, 6.3 yards a carry. Hopefully, if Marshall could do that to Miami, surely the Kentucky Wildcats can do that to Miami. Any quick thoughts on Miami from either one of you guys? Anybody watch anything on them or have anything to add about this game coming up on Saturday?
Well, one of the things that you need to keep in mind is that Marshall's actually picked second in their conference this year, so they're a fairly good football team. And then I'll tell you something about Miami of Ohio. Is they've struggled for the last 3 years defensively. Their defense has been bad, and a lot of it's been because of injuries. Now, they got some people back, but the problem is they're really small, okay? They're really small at the defensive tackle position. They're big guys, go 270, you know? 270 is not exactly SEC, okay? That's pretty tiny for a defensive tackle. And you've got guys, you know, even at 250 playing defensive tackle for the Redhawks. So their big problem right now has been that they are unable to do anything on defense. Their defensive line can't stop the run. It can't get pressure on the quarterback. And everybody knows if you're going to give quarterbacks all that time to sit back there and look across the defense, they're going to find a receiver. And that's what happened in that game. They just couldn't get any pressure on the quarterback. He had all day to throw, and naturally he made a lot of good throws. And the problem with them offensively is even though they do have some big guys on offense, they lost their stud quarterback left last year, and he threw for like, I don't know, it was a ridiculous amount of yards, took a bunch of sacks also, but I mean he was a dangerous player. You had to respect him, and they were like 90-10 pass to run, and now against Marshall they were like, I don't know, 60-40 run to pass. I mean, what's going on with it? I don't know what the coach is trying to do there. I mean, that's a little strange. But anyway, you know, yes, they're defensively challenged, and that means that it's really going to be difficult for Marshall to stop Kentucky's offense if they're doing anything right.
Right, and hopefully this is – with that being said, you know, do you think that – this could be maybe a confidence-building game for Kentucky. Let's say they put up, you know, 50, 60 points. You know, if Marshall could do it, hopefully we could too. Is this something that maybe could carry them in the next game against Louisville? You know, gain some confidence, okay, we got the bad taste out of our mouth. We stumbled out of the block, but now, okay, we understand what we want to do in offense. We see that we can put some points on the board, and we can be exciting. Is this something that, you know, maybe hopefully could propel them, you know, in the future? What do you think, Ken? Could that be the case, hopefully?
Yeah, I think that, you know, last week we talked about something good needs to happen to these guys after a 2-10 season and, in, you know, losing 40-0 to Vanderbilt and losing Tennessee and the ugliness that was the 2012 season. And obviously, you know, Western did not cooperate in that area. So I think, yeah, I agree. I think that these guys need, you know, this is a if you're ever going to play somebody that you should just manhandle, this is the time to do it for this football team right here. And you know, this is you don't have to worry about being overconfident. Oh, if they win 60-0, being overconfident going into Louisville. But I think these guys need, you know, the coach has talked about that. I think it was John Clay that, once again, to plug the Herald Leader, wrote a really good article about the coaches dealing with the team's psyche, the morale, their thought process right now, and that's a struggle. That's as big an issue as any physical shortcomings that they have. And so I think that's a 1,200-word article saying they need to win and play, not only just win, because they could probably play poorly and win. They need to play well and win and feel good about themselves going into this SEC stretch, because if they were to play poorly, you know, I don't know if anybody else watched Louisville and Georgia and Florida and Alabama and all these teams that Kentucky has lined up coming up, you know, you want your team feeling, you know, at least good about themselves if they have accomplished something or maybe on the right path before they tackle this. Just, it should be illegal. I mean, the schedule is just so hard. It's just Kentucky could be really, really good and go 5-6 or 5-7 if they were really good. But yeah, I think playing well, not just winning, but playing well. And when I say playing well, they should destroy this football team. It should not even be a ball game. Anything short of that, and they're going to have serious, possibly some serious issues going to the Louisville game as far as believing in themselves and believing in what they're trying to do up there.
Right. You know, you already lose to Western. If you go and have a poor outing against Miami of Ohio, and then you've got, you know, the number 8 ranked team in the country coming in. It's just, it just wouldn't be pretty. You know, already there's a talent gap. When you add to that emotional factor in there as well, it's just, like you said, Ken, it should be almost illegal, you know, but it is what it is. It's the schedule. They got to play it. So, you know, win the games that you can on it, and, you know, the games you don't win, at least perform well in. Before we move on to a little bit of basketball to wrap it up, let's go ahead and get our predictions. We all went 0 for 3 or 0 for 1 collectively. We're collectively 0 for 3.
What's that with
Sorry. Hey, we're here to right the ship. This week is the week. All right, guys.
Oh,
we're gonna, from here on out, it's nothing but positivity and good picks. So, predicting the score for Miami of Ohio at Kentucky, Glenn, you can go first. Tell us what your score is and why you think it will be that.
I think it's going to be 40-17 Kentucky. I think Kentucky under Max Smith is going to score a bunch of points, which is what they need to do. I mean, they just need to forget about – look, they need to try hard on defense, but they're not going to be a very good defensive team this year. But if they put up enough points and get a couple of turnovers, you never know what can happen against anybody. If you can score on everybody, you have a chance. So I think they need to focus on scoring on everybody and trying their best on defense.
You know what? They came up with some turnovers against
Blake
McClain. Blake McClain, you know, fumbles and you know that they did that. You know, they actually did cause some turnovers. Now, the problem was converting the turnovers into points. But at least, hey, you know, at least they were there. So you're exactly right. All right, Ken, what's your final score for?
You know, I'm gonna go super positive and say 48-13. 48-13. I think the offense is going to – I just think Kevin Smith, the quarterback, is going to make a huge difference. I really do. I don't think there's any excuse for Kentucky against a team like Western, against a team like Miami, not to score 30-plus, 35-plus points. I think they have enough offensive ability to do that. I say 13 for Miami. I really can't believe I'm saying that after what we saw Saturday, but – but let's just hope that this defense somehow. The thing is, guys, you have to believe that the defensive line is better than what they showed Saturday. I mean, you just have to believe that. If you don't believe that, and if it's not true, then I mean, it's really, really going to be super, super duper ugly all year long. So I chalk it up to whatever, nerves, whatever. I have no idea what to chalk up their poor play to, cramping. Whatever it might be, you've got to think, you've got to believe that they're going to do better, get more pressure on the quarterback, and not allow the run game just to go crazy. So I say they bounce back and hold. How many did they score against Marshall? 10?
10. 14.
14, so I'll go one less than 13. There you go.
All right. I'm actually pretty close to both of you. On the website, I picked Kentucky 48-20, and I'll stick with that.
Oh, there you go. We're right there together.
Yeah, 48-20. I think they're gonna, like you said, guys, with Max Smith, they're gonna put up more yards. They are gonna air it out. They'll finally be able to blare the sirens once again, and we're gonna see some exciting football offensively. Defensively, I know they put up 14 against Marshall. I still just don't think we're there. I think they're playing, besides Avery Williamson, they're switching guys around in the linebacking core. Secondary is, you know, Cody Quinn's still injured from all I can tell. They've really not said much about his injury and him coming back. Besides Blake McClain in that unit, it's just not good. And hopefully the defensive line can fix whatever problems there were. I got to give it to Smith, though. I mean, he did have a couple nice plays. He had the sack, and he had a couple almost sacks, and he ran down some tackles. But, you know, when your interior linemen aren't really – getting any pressure, it's going to be hard for you too. So, 48-20 is what we're looking at, hopefully, and big blowout this weekend for the Cats. And I said earlier that this is a big weekend for the University of Kentucky. The Kentucky basketball alumni game is also this weekend. There's going to be a lot of recruits at Kentucky, both football and basketball. John Calipari's got some top guys coming in. Jahlil Okafor, the number one recruit in the country. And the big draw, obviously, like I just said, was the alumni game. It was just released today on CoachCal.com. Eric Lindsay posted an article, some updates on the alumni game. He said that two players will not be able to play in the alumni game due to some contractual obligations with their NBA team, and that they will be coaching, though. They'll be like assistant coaches. KSR said that they think it is probably going to be John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins. As we know, John Wall just signed a monster contract with the Wizards and bought a $5 million mansion to celebrate. good for him. So the Wizards might not want to be want their highest paid player to be, you know, playing an alumni game for fun and have something terrible happen. So it's understandable. It takes a little out of the game, but you know, there's other guys playing: Terrence Jones, Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Eric Bledsoe. I believe Darius Miller's playing. I think Perry Stevenson, Brandon Knight, I believe, is going to be there. So it should be some fun. Do you guys like this stuff that John Calipari does with, like, the alumni games and the pros versus the Dominicans and the heroes versus the villains? Is this stuff that you guys look forward to? Or you're just like, okay, come on, Cal. It's just, you know, uber marketing overdrive. What do you guys think about the alumni game, Glenn?
I think it's good fun. It's a good thing to put on for recruiting purposes, because the closer you get recruits to NBA players, it's always good, because they see the connection between Kentucky and their dream. And whenever you make that connection as real as possible, that's when you have your best chance of getting that guy's commitment. So I think from that standpoint, it's really good. I think as far as a fan is concerned, it'd be fun, but I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way. I'd go to the football game before I'd go to that, you know, if the two were at the same time. So it's just kind of how it is for me, because it's really just an exhibition. It's just for fun. It's great for the kids because they get to see these NBA stars. I think that's all great. But, you know, for serious fans, you know, for guys who live and breathe the Big Blue, I think it's kind of it's great, but I can take it or leave it. But I think it really is good for recruiting.
Yeah, I agree. I went to the very first Dominican versus pros game at Rupp Arena, just because we'd never seen anything like that really before, to be honest. At least I had not to that capacity. And I went, and it was a lot of fun. I had a really good time. But, you know, it didn't have that feel of a real game. You know, it was cool. And the only player, it was really funny, because the only player on the pros, and we had John Wall there, Rajon Rondo, Joni Meeks made it back, Bledsoe, but the only player that really seemed like he was taking the game seriously was DeMarcus Cousins. he Boogie was out there, and he was not in a good mood, and he played awesome. And, you know, he and Francisco Garcia were you know, jawing back and forth, but I don't care what kind of game it is. He could be playing horse with DeMarcus Cousins, and he's going to play with a pissed-off attitude, and that's why I love the guy. He just, you know, everything is just live or die with him, you know. So that, you know, Glenn was saying, it was good fun, but, you know, I don't know if I'd go again, but it was really cool, and it is good for recruiting. What about you, Ken? What are you are you looking forward to the alumni game, or are you going to go out there, or you know, is there a player that you want to see, or a matchup that you'd want to see in this game?
Well, I want to see if Kenny Walker can still be called Sky. he's going to participate in it, and I'm 48 years old, so Walker has got to be in his early 50s, roughly, I would say. He's a couple years older than me, so that'll be interesting. I was really surprised when I heard that he was going to participate, but if you've seen him recently, he's been in great shape all his life, I guess. He looks like he's still hooping up, but of course, so does Jess Shepherd, and his wife beat him at a horse game pretty consistently. Of course, his wife's one of the top women's players over UK, Stacey Reed. Anyway, here's the thing. John Calipari is a master at dual positives, because he's got two things going on here. He's got one, he's bringing back all these players and these recruits, and like Glenn said, anytime you can get recruits in the same building, you know, with ex-UK players who are now in the pros, of which there are, 20 or something like that?
Yeah.
Along with some other historical names like Kenny Walker, who is an icon, a legend in this state. That can never be a bad thing. I can't even think of how that could be a bad thing. That's only good. The other thing is that he's raising a tremendous amount of money, close to $1 million, because this thing is almost sold out for about 5 or 6 different charities. There in Lexington. And so, you know, Calipari, yes, he is a marketing genius. I can count on less than one hand kind of the faux pas he's made since he's been at UK as far as PR type stuff. And he, you know, for all the garbage that's written about this guy in the national media, you know, he loves people and he cares about people and he wants to see people do well, not just his players, but people who are less fortunate. He appreciates where he is. He understands how lucky he is. And it's always great. You know, he's raised money for Haiti. He's raised millions. He's raised millions of dollars since he's been in UK. And all of UK's ex-coaches were really good about that. But he just really excels at it, knows he's not afraid to ask people for money. My dad was a fundraiser for many, many years for Camp Lucon, which is a Methodist camp. And the reason he was so good at it, he's not afraid to ask a rich guy for some money. And Calipari's not afraid to ask his former players and people who are big in the UK program to participate in things like this and come back and donate their time, basically, to help, you know, not only to help in recruiting, but also to help raise, you know, a tremendous amount of money to help those less fortunate than he is. So I think it's a great thing. The Big Blue Nation has responded. I think there's only a few other tickets left. I was going to be covering – helping Eric cover the thing Monday, but I had to bow out. I'm in the middle of doing all these dental appointments and opted to stay home, so I'm going to miss it. But it should be a pretty good time.
And yeah, just you bringing up the philanthropy of John Calipari, and that you're right, it doesn't get talked about enough. And he's not the type of guy that wants everyone talking about it. You know, he does it just because he wants to do it and because he is a good person. And like you said, he wants to see good things happen to people. And, you know, all the negativity that surrounds the guy, you know, justified, unjustified, you know, however you want to take it. The fact of the matter is that he helps, and he helps a lot of people in need. And that just doesn't get talked about enough. We only have about 10 minutes left here. Before we go, I'd like to end on the this year's basketball team and some comments made by players that we were just talking about. Kenny Walker was able to sit in on a couple of pickup games and practices with the current players and said that the player that Julius Randle reminds him most of is Sean Kemp. And, you know, we all remember the Sean Kemp episode of how he was a commit and he was going to come, but he just never made it on campus for some interesting reasons. We'll just leave it at that. But that Julius Randle is basically a freak athlete and that he has the potential to be the best player in the country and that he is a star in the making. The other ex-player comments came from DeMarcus Cousins and Eric Bledsoe, who just recently played some pickup games with the entire team, including James Young and the Harrison Twins, now that everyone's on campus. And they went up to Coach Cal and said, "We're back." But, you know, John Calipari being John Calipari said, "Yeah, you know what, we're back in pickup games." He's like, "Let's see if we can play together." And, you know, did the whole be your brother's keeper spiel and everything, which seems to just work for him so well. I don't know, guys. I just get really excited. The more I hear about him, the more I hear about Randle, the more excited I get. And it's just to hear guys like Kenny Walker and Bledsoe and Cousins, who don't really throw around phrase like that quite often, but to hear them talking, you know, so highly of this team, just, you know, it's got to get your blood pumping. What say you, Glenn?
Oh yeah, man, it's exciting. I mean, I sit here and I think about this is a team that really I've been waiting for kind of all my life. I mean, the 2012 team was the team I was waiting for, but it's come and gone. Now, this is the next big thing. I mean, these guys are so good right now, it's hard to believe. And Randle, yes, he's a stud, but, I mean, some of these other guys are just a lot better than people realize. I mean, James Young, he can do it all. I mean, he can shoot the ball. He can rebound. He's a very good rebound. He's 6'7". He's long. He can do everything. He can handle. He could do everything but shoot with his right hand, which is kind of a problem. But, hey, that's what you come to college for. And then, you got the Harrison twins. We know how good they are. And then you've got, Dakari Johnson doesn't get talked about enough. But he's a terrific player, a true center that wants to be known as a center. He don't want to be called a forward. He don't want to be called anything but what he is, a space-eating, dominating big guy down low, somebody you throw the ball to, and that he dunks it on top of people's heads. I mean, that's literally the kind of player that he wants to be thought of. And, obviously Randall is good. I mean, he's got all kinds of great skills. He can shoot it with range even a little bit. I mean, he's not like a knockdown three-point shooter, but he can make the shot. And if you lay off him, he'll take it. I mean, and one of the great things about him is that he is never going to be – he's like Archie Goodwin with more game. I mean, he has more than one tool in his toolbox. I mean, Archie kind of – there's the old saying, when all you got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Well, Archie was kind of that way. He could only drive. And so everything to him looked like an opportunity to drive to the basket. And so now Randall is not that way. He can shoot it. He can pull up. He can face. He can post. I mean, he can do everything that you need to do. He can shoot hook shots. He runs the floor. He does all these things. And that's the same way with guys like your two guards like Aaron Harrison and he can shoot the ball. He can drive the ball. He's 6'5", 210. I mean, what do you do when you're – that's got to be the biggest backcourt I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
6'5", 210. Your average is 6'5", 207 or something like that in your backcourt. That's your average. What backcourt average is that? I mean, that's huge. If
and,
you think about
and
it,
with
this
speed.
Is a huge. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, with 6'5", 207, average in the backcourt with speed and leaping ability. I don't know how these smaller guards are gonna contend with them offensively. It's gonna be fun to watch. I'll have you say the last word here, Ken. What do you think about these former Kentucky superstars comments about this team?
Well, I tell you, I think this team is if you were to tell John Calipari, okay, you have 10 wishes to put your team together. The prototypical dribble drive, which we've seen some teams have played a lot of the dribble drive since he's been here. Some teams have played very little. This team is you couldn't make a blueprint and put together a better skill set as far as it relative to the team. Than what he has. This is the perfect accumulation of players to run that offense because they can all basically do everything. You've got, on top of the fact that you have some outside shooters that are going to make defenses play honestly as they can. It's just the whole package. It's just this team is just the entire package. And what John Calipari has this year that he's never had before, or at least since his second or third year at Memphis, something he hasn't had at Kentucky, is he now has something to look back on. It's like your child, and your child screws up, and you can use that screw up over a period of years. And what he has now is, this is how not to do it, and he can use that as ammunition if this team starts to stray, becomes either egotistical or lazy or whatever the case may be, selfish. Any of that kind of stuff creeps up. He can point and say, "Do you want to end up like last year? Do you want to end up less?" Because that's exactly what happened last year, and he can point to that. I think he's going to use that if he has to. These guys, from everything that I've heard, are all get along and are friends and all this kind of stuff, and there seems to be already a pretty good chemistry amongst these guys. So I doubt that that will become an issue, but you never know. The season is long. Things can happen. You lose the game, you don't know how a guy's going to respond. But he's got that, you know, what happened last year, and he's got two guys in, you know, Poitras and Collie Stein who were part of that. And I think the combination of that, you know, this the incredible skill set of this team plus the experience of last year, that combination I think is going to be just really, really, really tough to beat. You know, I just – don't see them losing too many basketball games, and I think Florida is the only team in the SEC that has any chance whatsoever of challenging Kentucky for you know, SEC prominence. But it should be, you know, like Glenn said, you know, this is, you know, these enjoy it just like you did really every year except last year. You have to enjoy this because you just it doesn't last forever. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't last forever. So enjoy this year. It should be a blast.
Yeah, it definitely should. And practice, you know, begins, you know, just in just a couple of days, I believe. Yeah,
well,
the 18th. Yeah,
this is October 18th. I think he, you know, they're really, you know, pseudo practicing now.
October 18th. I'm sorry, you're right. I don't know why I said a couple of days. I haven't been drinking.
Practice, but you hadn't had the Four Roses.
No, I hadn't had the Four Roses. That was just complete. Complete brain fart on my end there. So
fail, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I think that about wraps it up for our week two football podcast. On behalf of Glenn Logan and Ken Hallett from A Sea of Blue, this is James Strebel signing off. And enjoy your weekend, Glenn. I know you're probably looking forward to it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, and Ken, good luck on your newest surgery next week.
Thanks.
All right, signing off for A Sea of Blues is James Strebel. Have a good day.